Welcome back to Season 11 of the Neuroscience Meets Social and Emotional Learning podcast, where we connect the science-based evidence behind social and emotional learning and emotional intelligence training for improved well-being, achievement, productivity, and results using what I saw as the missing link, since we weren't taught this when we were growing up in school, the application of practical neuroscience. I'm Andrea Samadi, an author and an educator with a passion for learning, and launched this podcast 5 years ago with the goal of bringing all the leading experts together in one place to help us to apply this research in our daily lives. On today's episode, number 331, we have our final interview before the summer months. Today, we'll be meeting with Allison Morgan, the founder of Zensational Kids. She's a pediatric occupational therapist, author, international public speaker, and educational trainer driven to empower youth and the adults that care and serve them. She's passionate about training educators, parents, mental health professionals, and allied health professionals, giving them effective techniques to develop skills like self-awareness, management skills, compassion, and resilience so they can model and authentically teach these skills to children. Allison began integrating yoga and mindfulness into her therapy sessions with children in 2007, discovering the multitude of physical, emotional, cognitive, and behavioral benefits that these practices offered her occupational therapy clients, and then recognizing the need for more mental health and social emotional learning programs in schools, Allison began writing curriculum and developing teacher training programs to help others share these practices. For those who followed our work over the years, you'll know that when I came across Allison, I was thinking, I wish I knew her in 2014 when we launched our curriculum into the school market and got to see firsthand just how difficult that would be. She's the author of curriculums for pre-K through high school age students, which is not easy to be focused on both elementary and secondary students at the same time. They're both vastly different, requiring completely different strategies. She wrote Young Explorers, Yoga and Mindfulness in Early Childhood Education, Educate to Be, Mindfulness and Social Emotional Learning for Educators and Students in the K-5 Classroom, and then Everyday Mindfulness, Techniques for Teens to Develop Compassion, Calm, Focus, and Resilience. And I had to be sure to connect with Allison before we take a break from interviews prior to those summer months, because of the importance of addressing the stress our kids are facing in the classrooms, especially post-pandemic. I look forward to meeting Allison and sharing her knowledge and expertise that this podcast was built around. Let's meet the CEO of Zensational Kids, Allison Morgan. Welcome, Allison Morgan. It is wonderful to meet with you after our email exchanges. We have so much in common, don't we? We've got gymnastics, SEL, neuroscience. Where do we begin?
Yeah. I mean, there's so much we can touch upon here, and I'm really excited to dive in with you because there are all these different elements of how we're linked and things that we can really help people maybe unpack and understand a little bit more for the work that they're doing.
Definitely. Well, I'm excited about this. Can we just start with you walking us through your career as a pediatric occupational therapist and then orient us to your background so we know how you got to this place?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So I went to school to become an occupational therapist. I knew immediately I wanted to work with kids from the very, very beginning. Early in my career, I worked in hospitals. I went to specialized schools to work with kids with different types of abilities. But the main part of my profession was school-based OT. So I was working with a lot of kids with autism, Down syndrome, ADHD. I mean, those were like the most common diagnoses. And then what I would call like gobbledygook, you know, the kids that they would go out for all this testing and it would all come back kind of inconclusive. You know, this is going back, you know, 25 years ago where they didn't have all the diagnostic categories that we have right now, especially with the autism spectrum. And, you know, I had a really successful career just being in schools, you know, working with kids of all ages. And about 15 years ago, literally, I walked into my first yoga class and started just experience what is breath, movement, mindfulness, like in my own body. And what was interesting was at that time, I sort of hit this point in my career where I was like, you know what? All these IEP meetings are the same. We're working on the same goals, doing the same thing, having the same results. Parents are saying the same thing. Teachers are complaining about the same thing. But it just sort of like, you know, when you're in that like environment where everybody's experiencing the same thing, it's easy to get just believe like, oh, this is just what it is. We're all doing the best that we can, but this is just what it is. But when I started practicing these contemplative practices, I just started to notice very, very quickly. When I say very quickly, like in my first like class, I totally shift into this other like inner state. The easiest way to describe it is I felt really calm, peaceful, clear, and powerful. And when I mean powerful, it's like I just like felt in control of myself. And like this is amazing. Like I'm on this like rubber piece of like cloth and just doing these things with my body, like not the squeezy toy, a bouncy ball, you know, all of those modalities and things that we would use in therapy to help kids perhaps or hopefully feel this way. But I was just doing it with my own body and it felt amazing. And then I just thought, you know, like, do the kids that I work with ever really feel this way? Like I have these supposed tools to help them feel this way, but do they really? Because I know that when I feel this way, I do better. When I feel good, I do good. When my body and my mind are actually aligned and in sync, my functional ability is better. So it must be true for all the kids that I'm working with too. So essentially what I started doing was I always go like, who's doing this? Who out there? Like knows this. I can't be the only one. But this is 15 years ago. So there really was like, everything I found was sort of like, you know, that woohoo, like spiritual kind of thing. And even though there's a big part of me that I'm like, yeah, I get that. I could see that. But how am I going to explain that to the administrators and the teachers? And
no chance.
So I just having that background in science, I'm like, okay, so I could see how when I breathe this way, I'm actually triggering something else within my nervous system. Like, what is that? And then what happens? I sort of went down this rabbit hole of like, look, just follow the science, what's out there. And at the same time, can I teach this to, say, a five-year-old functioning at a six-month level, a cognitive level? So I just started adapting, experimenting, trying things out. And really what I found is that, oh gosh, there's so much beauty about the human nervous system. And when we really get this nervous system into a place of balance, there's incredible things that we're able to do. And what I very quickly started to discover is, yes, I can find very creative ways to teach nonverbal kids how to access their breath and breathe in different ways, which changes how they ignite their nervous system. I can teach movement patterns that help do things like integrate primitive reflexes that keep them stuck in stressed patterns. And I can teach them ways to focus their attention, not on a task, but one single focused attention, that when they're able to do these things and balance their nervous system, their functional ability is way beyond where we are scoring them and what we are seeing. So I started seeing this just in my OT sessions, which then I wasn't the only one seeing these things. Teachers are saying to me like, oh, wait a second, what did you just do for the last 25 minutes in OT? Because he came back like super focused and like sat in circle time or was able to read that sentence or raised his hand in class after you said, like, what are you doing? And, you know, back then, all I could say was we did yoga and mindfulness in our OT session.
Right.
Because that was the best thing that I could say to them at the time. And they were like, oh my God, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody what you're doing. Right. Because no parent or administrator is going to, or some of the teachers are just going to freak out.
Right.
So that's really, you know, how it started. You know, 15 years ago, you didn't hear mindfulness in school. You didn't hear yoga in school. You didn't hear breathing techniques, focus attention practices. But that is really what I was doing, and figuring out ways that we could teach this to kids of different ages. And what it really morphed into was, you know, I was lucky that being an OT in a school where you had really good, I had really good relationships with everybody. So they trusted me. Right. So I'm like, look, you want me to stop? Tell me to stop. I'll go back to the spinny boards and the squeezy toys. You know, I'll go back to all that. And they're like, no, this works. This works. So what started to happen was everybody started asking me, you know, all the teachers, like, can you come in for 5 minutes? Because I've got these kids that they're not diagnosed. You know, I brought them up for for possibly getting an evaluation, but they're not going to evaluate them. And I'm really stuck and it's really distracting. So I just started doing things in full classrooms to help everybody. And the reality is, especially now, I mean, even 10 years ago, there were a lot of kids struggling in classrooms, just stress, anxiety, needing to move. Like, that's no surprise, because look at how, you know, in kindergarten, how long kids have to sit. And we know through the science is that they can't, they shouldn't, and they can't. It's like, it's normal. But in schools, like, they need kids to, you know, all essentially be able to do what looks like the same thing, sit down at the same time. So teachers were asking me to come in, and I was trying to figure out, okay, how can I do things with a full class, help the full class? And then it became, all right, how can I do things that are really going to help the teacher? Because these teachers are struggling. And again, this is way pre-COVID.
Yeah.
Way, way, way pre-COVID. I always say now, like, the things that we're seeing, you know, since COVID, they existed before. They're just magnified now. They're way, way more magnified. So I think that I was really lucky that I discovered these things, you know, I could say early in my career, like mid-career, because now I've been into this for over 30 years, you know, of just working in schools and working with kids. But, you know, we've really come to a time where especially schools need to look outside their typical box for solutions that are going to help them with what they're seeing right now, because there's a lot of struggle going on, a lot of struggle. And with that struggle, when you don't have answers, there's a lot of suffering. And it's all around, you know, The kids are suffering. The teachers are suffering. And parents are suffering because they don't really have the answers that they need. Like, why is my child behaving, you know, one way in school and another way at home? Why is my child suffering so academically? And what could we do? You know, there's just so much, so much.
There's a lot here. But what I loved, and I wrote it down, was you said the students felt powerful. And that's what I saw. I'll never forget when I made the SEL connection. I remember it was with 12 kids that were challenged to work with the speaker that I worked with at the time. And they stood up on stage in, I think it was the Superdome in New Orleans, and they were to present what they were learning. And I'm telling you, these kids had such power that it hit me like a brick. Like, what is it that turned these 12 kids around? And it was essentially SEL skills, like, you know, having confidence in themselves, having a good attitude, knowing how to public speak. So that's when it hit me. And now I see where you made the connection. You saw it yourself first. You're like, what is this in yoga? And then you saw it in the classroom, and the teachers are all like getting hit with the brick. Like, what are you doing? And so it was the powerful part, combining SEL with neuroscience, which is essentially what I've been doing for the past 5 years on this podcast. I'm like, these two go together, you know?
Yeah. And what's incredible is that, you know, for so long, when, you know, SEL was becoming more integrated and in schools, so many people are like, these are soft skills. Like, this is fluff.
Right. Yeah. I've heard that so many times.
Oh, so many times. But if we even take the words like social and emotional, like, we are social and emotional beings first, and that's how we learn. Right. Like, the social part, connection is our biological imperative. We have to connect. And in school, you know, when I started talking about this, you know, a decade ago, when you'd say the word connection, they're like, yes, we want them to connect to the content. We want them to connect to what they're learning. And I'm like, no, they need to connect to you. It's the human connection. They need to connect to you and the people around them in a way that helps them feel safe and seen. That's first. And the emotional part, we have to be more aware of what's happening emotionally within our mind and within our body, because that really tells us about what's the state of our mind. Where is our brain? Because if we don't feel safe, our brain is going to register that as there's a threat. There's a threat. There's anxiety. I'm not safe, which causes our brain to go into survival mode, which causes our brain and body to put us in states of protection. When we're in states of protection, the learning part of our brain, that prefrontal cortex, it doesn't even turn on. It's not available. So, you know, helping educators and administrators understand that social and emotional learning, it's not fluff. It's necessary for the learning part, the memory part, the organizational part. It's necessary for that to be activated and engaged.
Isn't that amazing that you saw it and you're like, what is this? And I remember seeing these 12 kids going, what are they doing? What is so different with what these 12 kids are doing? And they were doing it with a speaker that was not an educator. And at the time, I felt like he didn't have that. You know how teachers make the connection with the kids? He was an older man, and the kids were like, wow, gosh, why do I have to go study with this old guy? He didn't have that connection, but he gave them something that gave them power. The kids started to see, I can do what I wasn't able to do before. I don't care who's telling me. I'm taking notice of these skills, right? And that's when they saw it. It was the power that they got.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that brings up another aspect of this, you know, mind-body connection or nervous system regulation, that it's also something that we share with another person. So that's the whole aspect of co-regulation, which is probably a lot of what was happening with that gentleman, that when he holds the state within his own nervous system of just being calm or of just having this belief or vision that they can do something, there's this interesting connection that happens with the other nervous systems around you, where there's this entrainment, there's this connection.
Right. Because I got to say, he'd been doing this for years with adults. This was not his skill. I remember sitting there going, oh, I hope he's, you know, going to be able to get across to the kids. And I could see them rolling their eyes at times, you know, like teenagers. But then something happened that they switched and they listened. And that's what it was. He co-regulated them.
Mm-hmm. And there's also something, there's really something about, and I said it before, of having a vision of what you believe somebody is capable of. Because very often when we're working with kids, especially kids that have been struggling, and we've seen what they've done in the past over and over and over again, which shows us, let's say, the reality of like where their skill level is. So you as the adult come with that expectation of this is all they're going to be able to do. And lo and behold, that's all that they do. It's based on your expectation. But if we can come into this relationship, right, with either no expectation, like, wow, like with some curiosity. And curiosity is like the greatest, like, inventor of possibility. So we come with this curiosity of, wow, I wonder what today is going to be. And almost a little bit of optimism, like, I bet there's going to be something great that happens here. It actually changes that unspoken connection between those people. And it changes something about the functional ability of the other person. So I'm going to tell you a funny story. So one of my roles as the OT is I would go to other districts to do evaluations for them because I couldn't evaluate kids in my own district. It was sort of like a conflict of interest. So other districts would hire me to do the evaluations. And I always would make sure that before I went to pick up a child from a teacher or from their classroom, I would always first get myself into this stimulation of no expectation. I'm just here to be with this child and observe what they can do. And of course, I have to record on these standardized tests what their abilities are. And I would ask teachers to fill out a form of, you know, what are the issues? What are they challenged with? But I got to a point where I wouldn't read it before the evaluation. I'd wait till later because I didn't want it to become part of my belief of this is all the child could do. So I would bring the child to the evaluation room, and I sort of always had this mantra of, we're just here to spend some time together, and whatever comes of it, comes of it. There's no expectation of you. And what started to happen were kids were scoring way higher in every area that I was assessing. And of course, in schools, there's a lot of overlap between what the speech therapist will look at, what the physical therapist will look at, and what the school psychologist would look at, and the OT. And I was getting scores that's like, these kids are not even going to qualify because of what they were able to do functionally in the evaluation with me. No, I found that. So there was, I found it really, really fascinating. I'm like, yeah, there's, I'm skewing this because of how I'm showing up. Right. But I actually had to stop doing the evals because I knew that these were kids that in their everyday, they're not functioning at this level. And part of it is because of the environments that they're in,
right,
with the people that they're with, and they were going to need support. So I felt like I had this decision to make. Either I'm going to stop showing up the way I'm showing up and just show up as like the typical clinician to do the eval so that I could get the scores that the schools needed in order to get them qualified for services, or I'm going to stop doing the evals.
Sure.
So I stopped doing the evals.
Yeah.
Wow. You're just reminding me of all these times going back in the day before I even did this work. I sat in the room with some students. I worked at ASU doing tutoring with these athletes that were at risk in the classroom. And I remember sitting with them going, I don't understand where they're at risk. So to me, showing up is brilliant. There was this one kid, and I'll never forget his name, Ike Diogo. He ended up going and playing pro. But I'm just like, how are you struggling in the classroom? You are so skilled on the court. And the questions I was asking him about his attitude, how do you overcome obstacles? He was showing up with strategies that were far beyond what I could comprehend, you know, growing up with difficult environments. The level of thinking that he was at was so high. I was like, this kid has to be pro. And I don't know what strategies I could give him to get through the academic side. Why was he showing up weak in the classroom when he was a pro with his sport? Do you know what I'm saying? It was like,
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, a lot of that could have even been his own belief about himself.
Right.
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 And so on the field, he believed, I'm really good at this. And he got recognition for it, right, which from other people, which validated his belief. But when he's in the classroom, you know, it wasn't his strength, and everything around him supported the fact that it wasn't his strength. So it just started to compound his ability. It just started to reinforce his belief that this schoolwork just isn't my thing.
Right. Right. Interesting. And it was your belief in those students that they started to believe in themselves more. And I always saw that as a teacher. I see the potential in everybody. I sit there and I see them all as brilliant. I'm like, why aren't you using what they've got to come into it? The belief has to come from within, right?
Yeah. And I think the other thing right now, you know, in all fairness to educators, you know, they're in front of 20, 25 kids with all different abilities, all different nervous systems, all different backgrounds. And, you know, most of the teachers that I've met, which have been thousands and thousands and thousands, they want all their kids to do well. They want them all to thrive. But because of just the state of affairs of all that teachers are being asked of right now, their own nervous systems are totally dysregulated. You know, I remember when I first started running teacher workshops, you know, a lot of administrators would be like, you're a professional, like whatever's going on at home, like, you know, brush it off, step through that door frame, and you gotta like game on. You know, you've gotta deliver. There's a lot of content here and you gotta stick with the schedule and the lesson plans. And again, we are emotional beings that think. It's the emotions first, and you can't just sweep them under the rug. We need to all have tools to manage how we are feeling, because how we're feeling is going to dictate the state of our nervous system and the state of our mind and the state of how we interact and engage with other people. So, you know, so much of our work, you know, with my company, Sensational Kids, has been about how do we support these educators first? How do we help them manage themselves? And to not feel guilty that they're having a hard day. You know, to not feel like, what am I doing wrong? Because this is just so hard and I feel so anxious and so stressed and so overwhelmed. So how do I manage me first so that I'll have an easier time helping my students? And I don't mean helping my students by, let me adapt that for you and this for you and change this for you. And I got this clipboard for this behavioral chart and that behavioral chart so that I don't have to be an octopus in my classroom to actually physically manage everything. I can actually manage things just through my own nervous system state. Yeah, so I can create this hub of safety where my students feel like this is a safe space and I've got your back and I'm here to help. And that could all be done without like verbal interaction throughout the day. It's just this state, this, you could say, like this vibration that's or energy through the classroom. And that might still sound really woohoo to some people, like, oh, the energy, right? The vibration. But we all know what that feels like. We've all been in situations where all of a sudden you just don't feel safe. Nobody said anything. Or you're having a conversation with somebody and you're like, that person's not vibing with me. I'm not vibing. I don't trust that person. It's not because of anything they said. It's just a feeling that you have. That's your nervous system. That's your nervous system working for you. And everybody's got a nervous system and everybody's nervous system. And this is called neuroception. It's something that we know through the science is happening. Our bodies are constantly picking up this unspoken information from the other bodies around us. So, you know, part of my mission is helping educators understand that when you take care of you and your nervous system, a lot of things get taken care of in the classroom. A lot of those things that you're struggling with, like so much of the behavior.
Right.
Happening, you know, it's just been really, really interesting for me having, you know, worked with schools to help them, you know, implement a lot of these things and at the same time see the science coming in. Because when I started doing this, a lot of the science wasn't readily available. Like I just was going on my intuition and pulling up any sign, like, yeah, you know, relaxation response, you know, that's been around for a long time. So I was able to explain to administrators that would come into my therapy room and see me with students laying down on their back with their hands on their belly or their shoe on their belly, teaching them to breathe. And they'd be, you know, what are you doing? I could explain that through the science so that, you know.
Yeah, no, I think it was Dr. Lori Desitel that I came across when I was first trying to make this connection. And then she always quoted Dr. Bruce Perry, who wrote the book, What Happened to You with Oprah. And I remember standing in front of my kids in the classroom in the late 90s going, what's wrong with these kids? Not knowing it was all me. And I've said this so many times, it's just such a paradigm shift when we start to see the science and that, you know, my cortisol rising was making theirs rising. So that's why they were throwing the chalk brushes everywhere.
Right. Right. And it goes the other way too, when, you know, as an educator, you can feel like, okay, I've done my work, like I'm all regulated, but then you have a students' cortisol that's rising and they're in your face. And then you start to adopt their nervous system state, right? It is back and forth. And, you know, in classrooms, I would say it's a majority of it is if the educators can really become aware of their nervous system state, have tools to shift their nervous system state, that's going to help a lot. But when we use tools where everyone can manage themselves simultaneously, that's where the magic really, really does happen. Because the truth is, we all want to feel better, right? We all want to feel better. We just don't know always how to get ourselves there. And it's not as easy as just think a better thought. I mean, that helps, right? But that's really like playing with the mind. When we start to play with the body and respond to what's happening in the body, it's so much more powerful. And, you know, you brought up Dr. Laurie Desautels' work, and so much of it is really about recognizing the trauma, the role of trauma in our world right now, in our life, and how it is affecting our students. And that's another aspect of new information. It's been out there for a long time, but for schools to understand how many of our students have experienced trauma and what that means. And because of the rates of trauma really throughout our country, and especially since COVID, we really need to have more tools for healing in our classrooms. Because a lot of the behaviors that we're seeing are born out of the trauma that our students or ourselves have experienced that we haven't dealt with. And it seems like another layer of like, you know, okay, now it's our educator's responsibility for that as well. You know, that used to just be our school psychologist. We could send our kids to the school psychologist when there's mental health, there's trauma, and all of these things. But, you know, we're now in a situation where if you ask any educator, what percentage of your students either are struggling, like they have a diagnosis or they don't have a diagnosis, but they're struggling with a learning challenge, or you see a lot of anxiety or ADHD, you know, the list could go on. What's the percentage? They're going to say probably about 80%.
Yeah. I think of my own kids. This is like, you know, with all these tools and setting the stage right, it's happening here too. Like, we need these tools and we
right.
need how to use
right.
them.
Right. And I would say the two things within social emotional learning, when I say social emotional learning, you know, the castle pillars of what constitutes, you know, an SEL program are really the self-awareness and self-management. Because most of us, if you have not been raised in a home where being aware of how you're feeling and what you're thinking, if that hasn't been, you know, taught in your child rearing, you're not gonna know what that means, really. Like, how do I feel? And when I say feel, it's not just like naming an emotion, but also, you know, what are the sensations that my body is feeling in this moment? And, you know, probably if I asked you, Andrea, like, you know, name 10 emotions, you've felt, you know, within the last week, you can rattle them off. But I will never forget when Brené Brown wrote her last book, Anatomy of the Heart. I think that was the name of it. But, you know, she does so much interviewing and researching before she writes her books. And one of the things in her last book that she asked thousands and thousands of adults is, what are the majority of emotions that you feel? There were three emotions that most people would say that they have, like the three things that they would name. as their emotions?
Anxious, you know, fear, and happiness?
Happy, sad, and pissed off. like that's the common emotional vocabulary that a majority of adults have.
Interesting.
And, you know, what part of what we're doing with the programs in Sensational Kids is we're bringing in these tools where we can develop emotional vocabulary, because when we know how we're truly feeling, we know how our brain and is working and our brain and body is working together. And then when we pair it with tools to help us shift how our body is feeling. And when I say shift, it's through various breathing tools. So ways of using our breath, movement tools, and focused attention and mindfulness activities, we actually start shifting the hormones in our body. We start shifting the amount of cortisol that's streaming, which is a stress hormone. We start shifting the serotonin and the dopamine, and all these things help shift how we're feeling. And again, if we can bring ourselves to a state of feeling like safe and grounded and calm. And when I say calm, it's not always like, you know, there's this element of being calm and engaged, right? Which is like this happy medium of relaxed and excited, sort of like helping us get to the state of being in the flow. Or if we think about, you know, our window of tolerance, of being in this window of like optimal function and activation, if we start to learn the tools that help us to get there, that's where we really function optimally. So a big part of what we're doing in Sensational Kids is helping build that individual self-awareness of what's happening within me and self-management. What are the things that I can do to, maybe it's just be with this feeling right now, because it's not about like push everything away, right? But how can I help myself shift or get my mind and body regulated so that I can attend to this next task or this next interaction or this test that I have to take right now?
Right. I've got to ask you this, Allison, because it's coming up. You know, my girls do gym, and I think, do your girls do gym?
Gymnastics?
Yeah, gymnastics.
So
yeah.
My middle daughter was a competitive gymnast for many, many, until she entered high school, you know, from about second grade until high school. She was a competitive gymnast.
Got it. So you see the videos of the girls. Sometimes we're on our way to a meet, and I'll say, you know, what's going on? Because they're quiet. They've got their headphones on and they're in their own world. And I want to interact with them on the way. So I'll say, hey, you know, tell me what's going on. How are you feeling today? And they'll say, I'm nervous. And, you know, that's why they're trying to get pumped up with their music. And I heard that being nervous and being excited feels the same. So I try and explain that. I'm like, are you sure you're nervous? Or maybe it's excitement. And I'm trying to get them to identify how they're feeling and maybe shift. Like, oh, maybe I'm excited, like, for how I'm going to do, and lean them a different way. What do you think about that? Is that...
You're absolutely, absolutely correct. Nervous or anxious and excited can feel the same way within your body. The difference is when you're nervous and anxious, your mind is actually thinking about the worst scenario.
Like, I'm going to fall off.
When you're excited, you're thinking about the best.
Okay, I have another strategy that I can use, because yeah, what if I fall on beam? What if I, so I got to shift them. Let's focus on the successful completion of each skill.
Yeah. Like, what do you, want the outcome to be? Tell me about like your amazing beam routine. And one of the things I do remember from my daughter's training is the coaches would have the kids, part of their workout would be go sit down, close your eyes, and imagine yourself completing the most perfect routine. See yourself doing your flips, your splits, your all the tumble, all of that on the beam, nailing it. Imagine yourself nailing it every single time. Because the amazing thing is that your body doesn't know the difference between what you actually did or what you imagined. Right. So imagine it exactly how you want it, and your body will believe that that's what it did.
This is really helpful. And so I did look through some of your books, and I love the worksheets. I think they're phenomenal because from where I came from and knowing what was out there, they're beautiful.
Thank you.
So you've got your PBIS, and I'm going to say it out loud because I sometimes forget what all of this means, but positive behavioral interventions and supports.
Yes.
And your RTI, your response to innovation, your response
intervention.
And that aims to hit those struggling students early on. So, I've just got to ask, so how do you integrate this into the classroom? Is that not the most common thing? How do we find the time to put this into our curriculum?
Yeah. This is what I love about our programs. The fact that I built them in classrooms. So when I was building them, I'm like, I only want to come up with something that actually works for what the time teachers have and what is possible. So the way that our program works is that our main program, it's 40 activities, 40 tools. Not that you have to do all the 40 tools. It's to give you options. So there's breathing tools, movement tools, and focus, attention, mindfulness tools. And they're designed to be completed in 1 to 2 minutes. It's 1 to 2 minutes of time where everybody in the classroom is doing. So I designed them first as individuals. So I would use them in therapy. But what I realized very quickly is there's all these kids in the classroom that need it too, that are never going to be able to be classified to be in a room individually with me or in a small group with me. So I needed to design tools that could be used individually, small group, and in a full classroom so that everybody can access them. And they only take 1 to 2 minutes. And in that 1 to 2 minutes, what you're really helping individuals do is shift from, say, a dysregulated state, right? Where you could think of the kid that's all over the place, you know, really, really anxious, looking out the window, rocking in their seat. What we're working towards is taking that nervous system and shifting them into a regulated state in 1 to 2 minutes, so that then after you complete an activity, then you teach a new skill, right? A new lesson. And the idea is that you're not teaching to a dysregulated nervous system, because a dysregulated nervous system cannot learn. This is why so many teachers like repeat, 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 repeat. So if you can teach to a regulated nervous system, it means that your prefrontal cortex will be activated, right? So your executive functions will have the best chance, the best opportunity to be working for you And this is where you can hold more memory. This is where you can organize the information. This is where you can integrate the new information with the old information. This is where true learning happens. And some teachers will say, I don't have 2 minutes. Like, look at this lesson plan. Every minute is accounted for. But, you know, my response to that is, if you're teaching to a dysregulated student, you're going to have to reteach that anyway, which takes more time.
Yep.
So it really is about helping each individual become aware of what's my starting point? How am I feeling right now? What is going on? Let's find a tool that helps me become more grounded, more connected, ability to focus more, get myself ready to learn, and have their own little bank of what works for them. And that's why we offer, you know, the main curriculum is 40 tools, because not everybody is going to like or recognize the same type of shift with each one. So the idea is that if we're using these tools in a full classroom, you know, you try different things. And as the educator, just notice even for yourself, you know, what helps you feel more grounded, feel more safe within your own body, and what is helping your students do that as well.
Let me tell you this, because when I first started doing this work, you're talking my language and you've been doing this for years, but I started testing it when I was asked to go into the schools with a curriculum in Arizona. And I would take the programs and go to struggling schools that couldn't pay just to test it out and see, you know, how are they going to react? And I used Dr. Lori Desitel's one of her strategies, like you're saying, you've got 40. Let me just tell you about this one so that I can kind of, you know, for people listening that might be wanting to try stuff out. And it was a first aid station, an amygdala first aid station, she called it. And I just put
amygdala reset.
Yeah, exactly that. And I just put it behind me. And then I went and I was to teach the kids these character lessons. And within every time somebody gets into an argument or something while I'm teaching, and normally the teacher in charge would kick them out and be like, you know, Miss Samadhi's come all this way to teach you. Get out. And instead I said, could we just try the amygdala first aid station? And the kid rolled his eyes and he went, but he put lotion on. Like I just made it up. I just put a bunch of things, lotion and a whole bunch of different things to help reset them. And then he went and sat back down. And I thought, okay, this is it. Like, this was just one example, right?
That's right. That's right. That is just one example. And we're very, very quick to call kids out in classrooms when they're disrespectful or distracting or, you know, triggering other kids. But another thing that we just know from the science is that by calling them out for that and kicking them out, we're adding on to the pain that already is what caused the behavior. So when we start giving kids the agency to compassionately, like, recognize how you're feeling, it's okay, it's normal. What can we do? What can we do to help ourselves feel better?
Exactly,
because we have ourselves.
Know what the other kid said to the other kid that made them get into a fight. I don't think it had anything to do with me. It was like,
oh, probably not. Right.
I'm like, just let him stay. It's okay. Let's get past this. And so when you said people don't have the 2 minutes, that took, like, they were trying to kick him out. It took 2 minutes for us to say, instead of kicking them out, could we try this? And the kid just walked and put the lotion on and went and sat back down and was listening. I'm like, oh, that's cool to see a strategy work.
Right. Yeah. And this is what I'm really, you know, hoping educators will take the action. to allow themselves to try things that maybe their whole school isn't adopting yet, even, and just try something kind of out of the box that they've never done before and see if it works. Because I know that it does. I know that it does. And when we first started, we were really about helping all schools adopt this model of mindfulness, of self-awareness, of these self-management tools that are regulating to the nervous system. And the way that we would do this is through, you know, professional development. You know, so teachers would come for a whole day and learn all the strategies. They have the opportunity to feel for themselves how much better they felt. And then we would develop what we call mindful leaders in like really big districts so that they can continue with the work without having to need us there all the time. So we would do even more extensive training with key people, usually their SEL person or their school counselor or special ed director. And they would help support all of the classroom teachers in using the tools. And one of the unfortunate thing since COVID is a lot of schools just, they don't have that time to really have new training for their educators like they did before. So we'd have schools call us and they'll be like, oh, I know you have that whole day training to use all those tools, but could you do it in an hour? Or we have 2 hours, which makes it very, very hard for an educator to feel like they have the knowledge and the tools to use these modalities that they are first learning about. And some of them are really scared to, like, I don't know how to do mindfulness. I don't know how to teach mindfulness. And quite honestly, in a 1 or 2 hour workshop, that's really hard. So what we've done since COVID is we put all of our tools into a video library so that it can be like we are there in the classroom teaching each of these 1 to 2 minute activities. And before COVID, I was so against doing this, of putting everything in video form, because I so believe, and I know through the science, that it's really important for the educators to be able to regulate themselves and find this their own self-management. And from my experience of being in classrooms, anytime a video was on, teachers would then go and do, you know, let me get out that email, you know, let me call that parent, let me do that other thing. So I was really, really passionate about spending the time with educators so that they can really learn how to deliver and how to lead their students in these tools. And then once COVID hit, I was just like, oh, we got to help these teachers. We got to make this super easy and accessible for them, not only so that they can help their students, but so that we can help them at the same time. So we ended up putting everything in video form. So they just like click and play and they can actually use the tools at the same time. Like take that mind-body break for 1 to 2 minutes to reset yourself, which is what's really going to sustain that co-regulation through the classroom.
Wow. It's just, there's so much here and I wish we had more time. I could just keep talking to you about this. And it's making me think of tools that I've tested. Like I tested this product called Leaf Therapeutics that I wore on my abdomen. And it taught me to breathe. It would buzz if I was stressed. And it would buzz at times that I didn't realize I was stressed. Like before I'd go to sleep, it was buzzing. I'm like, do I need to breathe before I go to sleep? I didn't realize I was stressed. So I'm just starting to think, you know, that the solution was breathe. And this is what a lot of your work is based on, implementing a solution that now the science, like they had to invent this device that buzzes when our physiology is going off because we don't know. Or I would never have thought. There was a couple of times I was driving and I thought I was like doing good and it's going off. It's like, no,
right.
What? I was shocked that I was out of sync. I didn't realize it. So this is where I'm making so many different connections with what you've done. You know, do you have any quick success stories to share and your vision of where you're going just to kind of bring this into?
Yeah, sure. My favorite thing is when, you know, we have teachers that learn how to use the tools, are highly skeptical because this is really, really out of the box. They have this moment of, I'm just going to do this. I'm just going to trust this because I'm at my wit's end, right? And they come back to us with just like, that works. It's changed everything. It's changed everything for me in this classroom, which for me, you know, being someone who I've always worked with the most struggling students, and I know how for these students, even though they have those moments where they're pulled out of the classroom and they get all this attention and everything is adapted for them, but going back into the classroom, you know, especially like an inclusive classroom, is just, it always just feels so threatening and so stressful. And to know how many of those kids right now are in all those classrooms, and to have teachers like for that to click for them. And not only does it create a change for this teacher who is now feeling more confident, more calm, clear, and joyful in the classroom, knowing that change that has happened for all of those students, to me, it's just like, wow, what's the ripple effect of that? Like, what can we really, really like change and accomplish in schools when everybody's just becoming more and more in tuned to how things feel rather than how they look? You know, and that really is my vision. Like, can we bring more humanity and more of our humanness? And, you know, I look at like our nervous system as this incredible technology that we have, that every single human being has, that I still feel like we're just starting to really understand the wonder and the magnificence and the brilliance of what that means and what we're capable of. Like, what if we really start bringing that into how we're raising our children, how we're teaching our children, and how we are valuing the connection that we have, our human connection between one another. Like, wow, how's that going to look in really not even in a couple of years? Like, if we really did this, it's like, you know.
Yeah, that goes back to the beginning where you talked about this, the students and teachers were feeling powerful, right? That just brings it all in together. We're showing.
Yeah, like, I'm in control of me. And I direct where I'm going.
Not anyone else. I'm not going to go by circumstance or where I think, oh, this teacher thinks that I'm, you know, should be going into this English class. They don't see that I have the potential to go further until somebody does. They reach higher and they go from
right.
They realize they can do it. Like, that's what I see. This has the potential to really break people out of the mold. Oh,
This is good. This is good. Allison, I want to thank you so much for reaching out and sharing your vision that is completely aligned to me, where I've been the past 5 years. There are so many ties, and I'm sure we're going to stay in touch because this is
absolutely.
This is the vision. This is what I'm here to gather these people together like you and really advance this forward. If people want to learn more about you, is the best way through ZenSationalKids.com? Is that the best?
Yeah, that's the best way to find out, like to get in touch with me or to find out more about what it is that we're doing for schools. Also, I have a ton of free resources on the website. Like if you want to start just testing things out, you know, what you heard here is intriguing and you know that there's a lot of things that you're suffering with in your classroom or even in your home, for free, you can go on our website and, you know, download some things that you can try. I also, if you would like to try the videos, we also have a free offer for all of your listeners, Andrea. So they can go to ZenSationalKids.com/free stuff. So it's just FREESTUFF. And what that will give you is a whole month of videos that you can use in your classroom, or you can use them in your home as well, where it's us teaching these short 1 to 2 minute lessons of breathing in a certain way, moving your body in a certain way, or meditations. And what is unique about these videos is that each one, it's as if we're there teaching your child. So we give a little intro. For example, like, do you ever feel like your stomach is so tight because you're anxious about something or you're worried? And it just really doesn't feel good. And you just want to get rid of that feeling. And maybe what you do is like you scream at somebody or you rip up your paper because you're so frustrated. Well, you want to try something else that's actually going to help that feeling soften and help you do better at what you're about to like try. This is called, you know, such and such breath, or, you know, so it gives your students an understanding of like, why are we doing this? This is like so silly, right? So it
strategies that they can use,
right? And how to apply them. And that's the other thing that I think is so wonderful about, you know, teaching these things to students is that you don't have to tell them all the other times they should practice it again. They immediately know, you know, like we have had kids say to us, you know, the belly breath that you taught me. I was really, really nervous before I got on stage because I had to sing in, you know, school chorus, or I had to give this book report and I was really nervous. So I did that before I stood up there and I started talking, and I felt so much better, you know.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much. Just to close out, what do you want people to take away from all of this? Would it be your vision for change? I'm just trying to bring it all in. How would you like to?
I think it's even beyond just education. My big message is that we really do have the tools within ourselves. It's our, like you could say, even our God-given tools to help ourselves manage, cope, and feel good, feel happy, feel joy, feel connected. And no matter what your circumstances, no matter what things look like around you, we all have the ability to manage what's happening within you. So change happens from within. So have the compassion for yourself to understand how you're feeling. Not judge yourself because you're feeling a certain way, but allow yourself to feel what you're feeling and know that there are tools out there so that you yourself can shift from the inside out.
But thank you so much for meeting with me today. This has been
welcome. Thank you. Thank you so much for for starting this conversation and for everything that you're doing and you're bringing into the world, because I think it's just so important.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
If you're enjoying the Neuroscience Meets Social and Emotional Learning podcast, please don't forget to subscribe so you'll stay up to date with our new episodes. While you're there, please feel free to give us a review or a 5-star rating, as it helps others find us. For more information on our programs, books and tools for schools and the workplace, visit us at www.achieveit360.com.